Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, Progressive News Network brings you the news you won't hear anywhere else. Progressive voices from across the state, from the Panhandle to the Keys, from the East Coast to the West Coast, from the inland highlands to the watery lowlands. Progressive News Network, dedicated to bring you progressive voices you wouldn't hear any other way. I want to welcome you, tell you that Progressive News Network, the two producers, Mickey Royce and myself, Rick Spisak, want to make sure that what we try to bring you is news of the progressive activist community of Florida, the people who every day are working on environmental issues, human rights issues, economic issues, job issues, environmental issues, political issues, that are working to make this the better world we're talking about. And we want to do this because you should know that you're not the only one. You should know that there are lots of good people every day working to make this a better place. We have a very interesting show tonight. It's a special tribute to the democracy that we are struggling to build here in Florida, that we have a second in our series of interviews with candidates for the chair of the Florida Democratic Party. We'll have a panel of questioners, the same questioners who interviewed the other two candidates, will join us tonight to interview the final candidate of the three who were running. Now there's just two, Alan Clendenin and Allison Tant Richard. And we'll be joined by these fine people in just a few minutes. But now the news. In the ongoing saga of political corruption here in Florida, Hunting Deutsch, Rick Scott's job czar, has resigned over collecting unemployment while he was on vacation over in Europe. You know, so many times we hear about the frivolous, the casual, the undeserving, the unneedy, taking state benefits, taking unemployment, you know, the old proverbial Reaganized welfare Cadillac meme. But here we've got one of the chosen, one of the select among us, ladies and gentlemen, the person that Rick Scott chose to be his job czar. Well, he was on unemployment. Yeah. This is for the rich and poor alike. But you see, he was traveling in Europe on vacation two or three times while he was collecting his state of Florida unemployment. Hunting Deutsch, which oversees the state's unemployment program as executive director of Florida's Department of Economic Opportunity, resigned his $140,000 a year position after just 8 months in a letter to Governor Scott on Tuesday. Deutsch reportedly began receiving government benefits in 2009 after he was laid off from his executive position at Bank United, where he was employed for 35 years. According to the AP, Deutsch also received a confidential severance from the bank, which failed that year and was seized by federal regulators. Good thing he got his golden parachute first, huh? The Florida Current first reported that Deutsch nearly maxed out on more than $25,000 in government benefits paid at the maximum of $275 a week over 91 weeks between 2009 and 2011, a period during which he and his wife took multiple trips abroad despite a state law requiring unemployed recipients be available for work. Well, maybe he was available for work on the Riviera. Maybe he was available for work while he was touring the streets of Paris. Yeah, Golden Parachute must have weighed heavily on his mind when he went and signed up for unemployment benefits. A state official told the AP that Scott was unaware that Deutsch had received unemployment while he was resting on his big bank payout and Golden Parachute. I'm sure the federal receivers of that bank were completely uninterested in these matters. After working for 35 years and finding myself unemployed, he said, during a deep recession, going through the unemployment process has given me a sincere appreciation for those who are doing the difficult job of looking for work, as well as for the dedicated professionals who administer the reemployment assistance program, he said. But because of the administrative actions that continued under Deutsch's leadership, many labor groups charge that Scott and his DEO have made obtaining unemployment unnecessarily difficult. Would have guessed. My God. But it's really troubling that Deutsch took full advantage of the program when he was able to, but then turn it around and denies people who've lost everything the ability to go out there and put food on the table. Florida's AFL-CIO lobbyist Rich Templin told The Current, what the government changes have done is take something that was the bottom of the barrel and driven it down into the basement. The resignation marks the second vacancy at the top of the DEO since Scott took office. Jeez, not such a good selector, is he? The Palm Beach Post reports that Deutsch's predecessor, Doug Darling, resigned less than a year after feuding with Scott's then-chief of staff, Steve McNamara. EPA administrator resigns due to differences with the president on the policy of the XL pipeline. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson announced Thursday she'll resign from her post, reportedly over her split with the president on the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. Jackson, who served as commissioner of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection before the president tapped her as his chief environmental officer, said in a statement that she leaves the EPA confident the ship is sailing in the right direction. According to a report in BuzzFeed, however, Jackson left in large part due to her differences with the White House over the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. Keystone XL will be an extension to the existing pipeline carrying synthetic crude oil from Canada to refineries in Illinois, Oklahoma, and the Gulf of Texas. Critics of the pipeline contended it would raise gas prices and leave a devastating effect on the environment. The existing section of the Keystone pipeline has already had 12 spills in its first year. Okay, get that again? 12 spills first year, 12 spills first year, 12 spills first year. But of course, once they extended all the way across from Canada to the Gulf, it'll never leak again, right? Everything will be okay. The pipeline became a hot-button political issue during the president's election after President Obama rejected the TransCanada initial proposal to build a pipeline pending a full assessment of its impact, but then later authorized construction of the southern portion over the strenuous objections of those pesky environmentalists. Oh, darn them. This news, interesting for those of you who remember Occupy. Yeah. It seems that new documents released by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security by the Partnership for Civil Justice released just this past week show that the FBI and other intelligence and law enforcement agencies began a campaign of monitoring, spying, and disrupting Occupy movement at least 2 months before the first occupation action began in late September 2011. As early as August, while acknowledging the incipient Occupy movement was peaceful in nature, federal, state, and local officials from the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and many fusion centers and Joint Terrorism Task Force centers across the country were meeting with local financial institutions and their private security organizations to plot out a strategy for countering the Occupy movement campaign. Interestingly enough, one document obtained by the PCJ from the Houston FBI office refers to what appears to have been a plan by some groups, the name of which is blacked out in the release documents, to determine who were the leaders of Occupy in Houston and then to assassinate them with suppressed sniper rifles, meaning sniper rifles equipped with silencers. Isn't that just lucky? Sounds like the right to protest and peacefully petition for redress of grievances, doesn't it? Ho, ho, ho. Indeed, indeed. And there's so much more news. Sailors in Japan were told that they have to scrub their ships down This is on the, see, that is the Roosevelt, if I'm not mistaken. Let's double check that. Yeah, they were told to scrub down their ship and because it was heavily contaminated. And it seems their water supply was also contaminated. But that's okay. They were told that all they need to do is just scrub that down and everything will be just ducky. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let me bring on my questioners and we can hear from them. And then we'll start our interview with Ms. Tant Richardson. So here we go. Let me bring on our first guest. Good morning. Welcome. Okay, and now our second. Good morning.
Hi.
Welcome. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. This is Susan.
Hi, Susan. Who else do we have already? Okay, well, the other, they must have walked away from the phone.
And, no. Hi, I'm Sal.
Good morning. This is Maureen McKenna.
Hi, Maureen. How are you? Welcome.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having us.
Great, great. Is that Allison we also have?
It's Phillips.
Oh, okay. Great, great. Okay, and ladies, I'd like you to talk just a little bit about yourselves and about the questions we'll be asking in just a few minutes. Susan, why don't you go ahead and lead off?
Okay. Well, I'm Susan Smith. I'm president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida, and we are a group within the Democratic Party whose mission is to keep progressives engaged in the party. We know that we had a lot of people who were so disgusted in 2010 they wanted to walk away, and we formed a caucus to try to keep those people engaged in the party because we want to push the party in back to its democratic values. And before we end the call, I want to talk about our meeting that's going to be in Orlando at the end of January.
Okay. And Dr. Maureen, you want to speak next?
Sure. I am Maureen McKenna, and I'm the first vice president of the Democratic Women's Club of Florida. We have over 40 clubs across Florida, excuse me, with over 2,000 members. We're a politically focused organization. We focus on electing progressive Democrats, especially women. And in addition, we provide legislative advocacy at every turn. Thank you for having us.
Oh, you're very welcome. And Sally.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm Sally Phillips, and I'm president of the Florida GLBT Democratic Caucus. We have 13 chapters throughout Florida in the different counties, and we are focused on electing equality-minded Democrats. And, of course, equality-minded Democrats, we feel, are very progressive. Or they at least they need to be. So we connect with not only the Progressive Caucus but the Women's Caucus, and we're really happy to be part of this these calls or these sessions discussing the Florida Democratic Party chair race. We feel it's extremely important that everyone needs to have a voice, and we need to hear from all those that are running. So we thank you so much, Rick, for what you're doing.
Well, I think it's fantastic that we're hearing these thoughts, these positions from our candidates before the voting takes place. I like to see democracy with the little d, and I salute you ladies for assisting in this process. I know it was a long and tedious process to get these questions selected and then to winnow them down to something that can be done in a reasonable period of time. So I want to thank you as well. Well, let's see. I think we also have, let's see, Ms. Tant. So let me ask you to come on.
Can you hear me?
Just one second. Yes, there we go. Ms. Tant, come on in.
Okay. Great. Hi, I'm here, everyone. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to be part of the show, and thank you for being patient with me as I've worked out my schedule. I missed the last go-round because I was on an anniversary, wedding anniversary trip with my husband. And as you know, when you have three kids in the house, you don't get a lot of quiet time with your husband. So thank you for being patient with me to work this out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It, I think, is a service to all Democrats in Florida.
Thank
so
you.
So, ladies, let me ask you to go ahead, begin your questioning. Again, thank you all for participating. Susan, I think you lead off.
Okay. I'll start by asking Allison to give us just like an elevator speech introduction, 30 seconds to a minute of who you are and why you want to run for the FDP chair position.
All right. Well, thank you, Susan. I am a native of Florida, grew up and born in Jacksonville, lived my whole life in our state. I've been involved in political and advocacy and progressive causes most of my life. And one of the reasons that I'm most passionate about doing this is I am loath to see the loss of momentum that we saw in 2010 this year around. And I'm just anxious to push us forward, push us farther. I've been very engaged in the Obama efforts and saw firsthand how that ground game and along with the data work along with the donations can really forge together to make a very cohesive result occur for all of us on the Democratic and progressive side, and I'm anxious to marshal those forces to keep us moving forward. I'm also very passionate and very, very consumed by this notion that had this last election not gone the way it had, and we didn't have Barack Obama returning to the White House, that we would see a rapid fire deterioration of everything that all of us as Democrats and Democratic women, Democratic men, and progressives hold dear as our values. We would see the war on women continue. We would see the undermining of our safety net for our senior citizens and the tearing down of the Medicare. We'd see further punishment and deterioration of those programs that for people who, just because of who they love. We would see reversals in acceptance of our Hispanic community in Florida. It would just be one rapid fire attack with greater pressure than we've already endured. So that's why I'm very passionate about pursuing this post, because I feel I want more time, more policies, more Democratic stakeholders at the table to keep those things from happening.
Okay, thank you. My part of the questions are more on FDP policies and processes. And the first question, you mentioned donations, is about fundraising. That is one of the primary goals we know of a chair. So this is the specific question, the question that one of our members had. What would be your fundraising goal in 2013? And what, with the emphasis on new and innovative strategies, would you use to raise that amount?
Well, the fundraising goal last year was $2.4 million. It was exceeded by about $60,000. I want to, of course, up that ante for the state, the size of ours, and with everything that we have at stake, it needs to be a much higher number. Just so you know, as I understand it, that the Republicans outraised us like three to four to one. So we need to significantly up what we're doing so that we can be competitive in this field. Because, we were able to overcome the shortfalls and donations because of the ground game that we have, but we have to build in that with the resources to support that. In regards to how we would do that, we need a robust data management program and also the voter contact program that we saw work so well with the Obama campaign. And we need to invest heavily in voter management software, technology, and data processing and programs to make that happen. We've got to keep the voter engagement high and the voter contact high, and that's part of what we want to do. I built in my area a fundraising council. I was chair of the Northwest Florida Finance Council for the campaign, and I raised funds that I did in my area with small donations, not with large donations. I'm talking putting together networks of people who could reach then out to their network to raise $25 donations, $10 donations, $30 donations, small donations to make this go forward. And I'd like to continue to build upon the internet-based donations that the Florida Democratic Party started this time, but enhance them with all the new tools that we can bring to the table.
Okay, thank you. The next question is about the chair's election itself. Do you think the process for selecting the chair is a fair one? If not, how would you change it?
Well, I think there's going to need to be some change up in this process. It's got to be more open. It's got to be the subject of some rules discussions and some committee discussions, and I'm committed to doing that. That's something we've been having discussions about already, about how we move forward and make this a little bit better a system.
Okay. On the primaries, another thing that I know really frustrates Democrats at the local level is, you know, we have to sign a non-endorsement clause that we won't take a position in a primary, yet the FDP seems to take positions and anoint certain candidates with, you know, with advantages that other candidates don't have. You know, for example, they will send staff to certain candidates and not to others. They'll send fundraising out letters out for one candidate and not for another, talking in primaries. Would you change that in order to prohibit the FDP from doing it, or change it in reverse so that the local parties could endorse? Would you do anything with that process?
Well, I think it's an interesting question because it certainly doesn't give them a level playing field. I think that's a problem. I think that if the rules have to be the same either, both ways, I think. You know, I don't know why that policy would exist, and I think that we'd have to have it either open across the board or closed across the board. So I think we'll have to be looking at that as closely as we're looking at some of the other rules changes we're talking about. Because I can understand the frustration on that. I've seen it myself.
Okay. And then my last question has to do with the loyalty oath. Should a loyalty oath be required by all Democratic Party officials and leaders? I think we also have seen some of our leadership in the past election, for example. I think there were some elected officials who did not support Kendrick Meek for the U.S. Senate seat. They openly supported the independent candidate in that race. And do you think there's a way to enforce that loyalty oath, or is there anything you have to say about the loyalty oath and Democrats?
Well, I actually have the opinion that we need to have a loyalty oath, one to the other as well as to the elected. I mean, the whack-a-mole kind of game that goes on within some of these organizations is very distracting, and it takes too much airtime to resolve differences between folks. But in terms of the loyalty oath, I do think that that's got to be looked at. I have experienced this in my own chapter in Leon County, and that is something that the enforcement seems to need some beefing up. The bylaws are very clear on that, but you can dismiss someone for that on by virtue of a two-thirds vote, and the question is, how do you do that in our local DEC? And you've got to look at your membership on that. But, yes, I do believe that the enforcement mechanism needs to be reviewed and put into practice.
Okay, that finishes up my portion, so thank you, and I'll turn it over to Maureen McKenna.
Yes, Allison, I'll be asking questions about the Democratic Executive Committees and candidates. Mm-hmm. What long-term strategies would you employ to recruit, develop, and train more women, LGBT, youth, and minorities into leadership positions within the party?
That is really where it's at, and how we grow our party and how we grow our activism. I'm really glad you asked that question. I think that we need to be looking at, first of all, I think all of the credential committees of our local DECs need to be very aggressive about looking at the vacancies in our precinct captain levels, and we need to be working with local opinion leaders, community activists, local elected Democrats, and advocacy groups for health care, children's issues, education issues, et cetera, to identify people who should be plugged in and recruited to be part of our structure. I think that they should be partnered with on committee in their committee work with existing longtime members of DEC leaders, and then mentored into how to become active and leader, active members, and very proactive in getting things, finding their voice and helping them be productive members of our local DEC. I think that that's where you would start. You would start with partners in your community and bring in more people into your DECs. Likewise, you would support, the DECs need to be supportive of our Young Democrats clubs, our you know, women's clubs, our GLBT clubs, all of the clubs that are outside of our DEC. We need to be mutually supportive and working together to achieve a unified result.
Thank you. What long-term strategies would you implement to identify, mentor, and train more women, LGBT, youth, and minorities in order to prepare them for running a successful political campaign?
Well, one of the things that we have seen is that the Democrats who have won these last several elections are men and women who are part of the fabric of their communities. They are involved in a number of civic and community organizations. So what I would do is look at, and I am actively doing this in my own areas, recruiting people to boards and groups that I am part of so that I think would be good potential leaders to step up down the road into community organizations, and then helping them network in the community that we live in the communities that we live in, so that they are not starting from ground zero with no contacts, no understanding of what's happening in the communities that they're trying to then serve, and then plugging them in to local and city count. And, you know, we have in our community a number of study commission groups, and I work actively to get people committed and also appointed to those kinds of groups, looking at energy, looking at the environment, looking at education, looking at transportation for disability groups, looking at children's issues. So I work hard on making people that I think of as a good opinion leader and someone who should be groomed for public office. I look to plug them in their community, and then I look to move them up in their communities so that then they can participate in an elected office with some strength. The other thing is, I think we need to look at all of those groups that are out there, and you choose people and recruit people from those groups after we've given them some mentoring and some help into local and city county commission races and into our local DECs, and mentor and provide them. There's also lots of training out there through Emily's List and Ruth's List and some of the Progress New Florida work that's being done, and we need to bring all those resources to bear, all of our partners out there together to help give our folks some support. I think it can be done.
Thank you.
There's also, in regards to the young people, there is a Young Electeds Network that's very active. I work very closely with them on all of these same issues. So that's how I would start.
Thank you. What are your plans to show support for local candidates in the 67 counties, and how would you determine which races are viable?
Well, that's an interesting – first, it goes back to our opinion leaders. It goes back to the ability to help them raise funds. It goes back to how we have identified them all along. And it goes back to the building of these networks in our communities and in our DECs to make sure that we are putting into place candidates that we have supported through the building of their resume, so to speak, and then getting them plugged in where they need to be so that we can make them viable candidates long before they just show up and say, hey, I feel like running. But I do know that there are, you know, ways that are those assessments are being done, and it's based on how they're woven into the fabrics of their communities, how much money they can raise, how much support they can engender, and those are things we need to those are things that are based on now. So we just have to help work on that before they get there. But, yes, those are all things that need to be done.
The next question is about swing county versus 67 county strategy. How would you balance the need to target party resources with the need to recruit viable candidates for every statewide race?
Well, first of all, we should not have any races go uncontested. We did have that this last year round. I particularly, you know, want to focus on a couple of our cabinet positions to make sure that we are very actively engaged with a candidate that can win at the cabinet level, and just go ahead and we need to pick some of those off. I was very discouraged this last election that despite our gains, and thankfully we did have some gains this last round statewide, that we did have some seats that were just, we didn't field a candidate in, and we cannot let that happen again. Part of it is we have a culture of fear that candidates aren't going to win, so then consequently we don't run anybody, but that's how people burnish their armor and get in and get vetted, get through that system and build some name recognition so that they can win. And so we have to field candidates every single time. How we look at that, that's a really good question. And we have to look at the swing counties. We're working on a little bit of that right now with the progress. I'm thankful it's not my dog. We're looking at that right now with Project New Florida and how we appeal to voters who are not politically attuned and who are swing voters. And so that's all data that's being mined and worked on right now.
What measures would you put in place to assist DECs, clubs, and caucuses in building membership?
Well, it's what I went back to what I spoke to earlier today, earlier in the discussion, is that our credentials committee need to be highly focused on recruiting quality individuals based upon the networks that they have in their own communities and people who want to serve to our DECs. I want to make sure that we are looking at folks who are plugged in with their communities, looking at folks who opinion leaders and elected officials and advocacy groups can get behind and they can work with. I want folks who have their own networks of people who can write checks, people who can engage in campaigns, people who want to walk neighborhoods, things of that nature. And we need to train them. We need to give them some idea of what their roles are supposed to be once they're there. We need more support for our precinct captains, for our committee men and women, so that everyone has a much better understanding of what they're to do. And then we need to make it so that what the tasks that they then engage in are effective and they feel that they're contributing and they feel valued for their commitment and their training. So I would like to beef up all of the training for them. I would like to beef up access to data and to making it a pleasure to serve in our communities for Democrats.
Will you support development of a nonprofit FDP mailer which would allow DECs to buy in and in so doing be able to take advantage of FDP's nonprofit postage rate?
It seems to me to be a fairly simple ask. It seems easy to me to say yes to. I don't know where that stands at this moment and why there wouldn't be such a thing, but it seems like that would be an easy thing to do. If we have the capability, we ought to do it.
Under your leadership, will the FDP give more direction in writing and implementing a campaign plan for each DEC?
That seems like that's a core mission that we ought to be engaged in every DEC, and so the answer to that is yes. What I'd like to do is look at best strategies across our state, or best practices, rather, across our state of best functioning DECs are doing in that area and look at how we can adopt those practices across our state and across other DECs. I'd also like to look at what some of the other states whose maybe demographics are similar in terms of a particular area, small county, large county, medium county, and how they do it so that we can bring those resources to bear. This seems to be a very simple thing to look at doing, and the training ought to be provided.
Would you charge Democratic candidates for use of the van, or would you provide it free of charge? Please explain.
Well, I know that a lot of Democratic candidates are struggling already, you know, to pay filing fees and everything else to use the van. But I understand, it's my view that the van needs updating, and we're working on doing, I'm already talking to folks about doing that so we can update it to be similar to what was utilized for voter contact, voter engagement, and voter identification with the Obama campaign. So I think that's going to get easier for us to do in terms of charging. That is an issue. I think this is just such a struggle for Democratic candidates to be able to pay an extra fee on top of filing fees. And maybe we can work out a strategy for, not unlike the signature collection, where we make it easier for our candidates to use the van. But it ought to be available through their DEC. You know? So that's something we need to be looking at. Is it a uniform practice across the counties now?
Is it a, are you asking me, is it a universal?
Yeah, yes. Is it
no.
charged now?
Right. Yes.
Wait, am I still
for candidates? For candidates, it is charged.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm sure that it's an issue of economics, but I think that we need to be looking at that and making it easier for our Democratic candidates to run. So
okay.
than
okay.
not.
And my last question, in what way would you change van usage and access for local DECs, clubs, and caucuses?
Well, I believe that I know that I have access to the van now, and I think that, like I said, I believe, as I mentioned previously, I believe that the van needs to be updated, and I believe that the access to it needs to be easier for our candidate, for our clubs, and for our DECs, but I think we're going to be looking at updating that whole system.
Thank you. That was my last question. Now I'm going to turn it over to Sally.
Go ahead, Sally.
Okay. All right. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to turn down your computer in the background.
Okay.
Echo.
Okay. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay, great. Now, hi, Allison. How are you?
Fine, Sally. How are you?
Good. We appreciate you being on. The questions that I'm going to ask are focused on legislative issues where it comes to marriage equality, abortion rights, ERA, public education amendments. And the first three are going to be yes or no.
Okay.
The first is, would you publicly call for a marriage equality, and would you sign the Freedom to Marry pledge?
Yes.
Okay. Second question, would you publicly call for passage of the Equal Rights Amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Third, would you publicly support a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices?
Yes.
Okay. All right, now we're going to talk about platform issues. Considering that marriage equality was not specifically included in the FDP platform, but is in the DNC platform, will you work to include it in the FDP platform in the future?
Yes, I was very disappointed that was not done this time. That's gross.
Okay.
Gross.
Okay, now, follow up to that. What would you do as an FDP chair to advocate for the FDP and the DNC platform, especially as it relates to marriage equality, abortion rights, the Equal Rights Amendment, public education, and future ballot initiatives?
I think that's fairly easy. I think that's something I would do I would like to see us with all of that adopted in our platform. I would like to see the DNC there should be no daylight on those issues between us and the DNC, and I think that we already have those things on the platform of the uniform between the state and the DNC platform. And I would advocate for that across the board on all of those issues.
Okay, and then the last one was the ballot initiatives, like amendments to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Yes, those are critical issues, and I think that we definitely would need to do that. Part of the issue there, of course, is the signature collection in order to get them on the ballot and have them there, and to pursue them through the legislative arena, we have to have enough Democrats to put them on the ballot through the legislative arena. So we have a lot. We would be starting from a deficit, but we would have to do that. And I think that inclusion from the DNC level would be key to helping us be successful to get more items on the ballot. But we have a lot of work to do on the ground game
well,
on that.
And I think specifically that question, and I know where it came from, specifically on Amendment 2, when the FCC did not take a position on Amendment 2. And we feel very strongly, we within the GLBT community feel very strongly that the FTP should have taken a position, but there are other amendments to the Constitution, you know, that we feel like we need to take a position on.
Absolutely. That was that amendment loss I took just so hard. I couldn't believe that went down. No, that would be something we would have to advocate for. That would have to be part and parcel of what we do. There's no way the FDP should sit that out.
Okay.
I took that one personally. Right. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, next. Do you favor developing a strategy along with the state and federal legislators that would be more proactive in supporting our platform stances through the through legislation?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. I would favor that. And part of that, the biggest part of that, is getting more Democrats elected so we have more voices to do so. So, yes, I would.
Okay. And my final question, actually my second to final question, what would be your strategy to reach out and recognize the particular groups within our party, such as the Women's Caucus of Florida, the GLBT Caucus, the Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus, the Young Democrats, and the Progressive Caucus, and of course there's the Disability Caucus, there's the Environmental Caucus. You know, we have many caucuses throughout. But what would be your strategy to recognize these caucuses as leaders and their members within the FDP planning and policy implementation?
They have to be equal partners with us. The reason that there are these caucuses is because they represent the very core values that we all have as Democrats. And they need to be at our table, at our side. They need to be a vibrant voice of leadership and how the FDP does its work and how the Democratic electeds do their work across our state. And I would love, my plan would be to have them as partners at the table of everything that we do going forward. I'm thankful for the hard work. I know that I'm thankful for the fact that the Disability Caucus, the Environmental Caucus, the GLBT Caucus, I'm just thankful for all of the commitment that everyone has to advancing our issues, because we are such a broad tent, and then we need all of our partners working together to make the difference happen across our communities that have. So we have to have them as equal partners with everything that we do. We have to have strong representation and a strong voice. I would support more as much as we can do to strengthen their voices as possible.
Okay, well, thank you. Now, my final question, and this is something we asked the other two candidates when we had them on. Could you give your contact information? So if any of our listeners out there would like to contact you direct, either both an email and a phone, maybe a cell phone or something?
Mm-hmm, sure. It's Allison Tant. That's A-L-L-I-S-O-N. T as in Tom, A-N-T, all lowercase, all one word, @gmail.com. And my phone number is 850-251-6040.
Okay. Well, we thank you very much. And now I'm going to turn this back over to Rick. Thanks a whole lot.
Thank you so much for joining us. I do have one other question that we've asked of all the candidates. And this is regarding the next election. And the question is this. Regarding Charlie Crist and other candidates, would you assist in clearing the way for Charlie Crist to represent our party in 2014? Or would you actively encourage a Democratic primary if he gets into the race?
It's got to be a Democratic primary. If he gets in the race, he cannot have any assistance from the Democratic Party. He's going to have to make his own case to the Florida voters. That's going to be totally the call of the Florida voters as to how they perceive that election. And I'm of the thought that he's not going to need a lot of help from anybody to make his case. He's going to have to do it all on his own. So no, it's got to be a wide open race, and all of the candidates have to have a fair shot.
Well, thank you so much. And I do want to make this one small suggestion. In the past, some members of the party have felt that the progressive community wasn't fully backing. And what we've said in the past is reach out to us and we'll be glad to give you a platform and provide additional ways for you to outreach and for you to speak to our community. And I just want to extend that invitation. Should you be elected, or even if you're not and you're still involved in the party, please feel free to contact us and we'll be glad to share some space with you and let you get your message out through our medium as well.
Awesome.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that very kind offer. I am heavily engaged in progressive work. I did work very hard on the Awake the State rallies, and we had a big women's rally, warm women's rally back in April that I was very engaged in with my community. I've been very engaged in education, public education issues on the progressive side, as well as the Project New Florida work and the Pink Brick Slip. So I really am very thankful for everything that you all on this call are doing and appreciate your hearts and your intellects. I know you sacrifice time, sleep, and your own funds, and it does make a difference, and you are making a difference, and I'm very, very thankful. So thank you for that offer. I appreciate it. I will take you up on it.
Good, great. And thank you again for part of this being part of this participation. It's a great way to outreach and speak to the larger Democratic community. Thanks again. Thank you, ladies. Do you want to make any final statements? Susan, Maureen, Sally?
I do. This is Susan. I just want to let everybody know that our meeting, our Progressive Caucus general meeting and election will take place in Lake Mary, Florida at the Marriott the day after the FDP election. We'll be meeting from 9 to 1. If anybody would like information about that, they can contact me at stsmith222@aol.com. We'll have it on our website as soon as we get the details worked out with the hotel. So we hope everybody will come. We'd like a great turnout, and we're working on some speakers now, and we hope whoever is elected, I got to get my grammar right, will come to our meeting the following day. Anyway, thank you and Happy New Year to everybody.
Okay, and this is Sally. The GLBT caucus is going through our renewal process at this point. We are asking all our members and we are asking all the progressive community to come in and join us and be part of our caucus to fight for equality. We are having the end of January, just after the FDP meeting, we are having regional meetings all over the state. We have 7 regions, and we are electing regional directors. And then in the week of the 23rd and 24th of February, our Rainbow Democrats out of Orlando are hosting us, coming into Orlando and holding our winter conference meeting. So I'd like to put that out there and invite everyone to join our caucus, become involved, and then get involved in your region, wherever you might live, and then come and join us in Orlando and let us celebrate the Rainbow Democrats and show them off. They're our newest rejuvenated chapter, and let's have a little bit of fun as we go. So, and Happy New Year to everybody, and again, I want to thank everybody on this call for putting it together, Rick particularly, and you guys have just done a phenomenal job, and we thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you. And
this is Maureen. I want to say Happy New Year and thank you to everybody involved in this. I want to mention that the Democratic Women's Club of Florida will be having their state meeting January 11th and 12th, and in fact we will have our FTP chair candidates visiting us for a hospitality suite on that Friday evening. If anybody is interested, they can get a hold of me at the cell phone number of 863-214-4680 or my email address momcken@yahoo.com. We are also gearing up for our Tallahassee Lobby Days, our Tally Days, April 7th, 8th, and 9th. and we would welcome anybody that would be interested in joining us. We have a whole host of speakers, and we will be at the Capitol advocating. So I look forward to hearing from anybody that might be interested. Thank you, and Happy New Year. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks to all. And with that, we're going to finish today's episode. Thanks again, ladies. Appreciate your efforts on behalf of democracy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Boy, that started.
There's a better world to come and tell you why.
Enough of that, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go ahead and just bow out of this segment. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.